Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and beginning on June 12th, if you didn't already know, the World Cup soccer tournament, which takes place every 4 years, begins. This year, it's in Brazil, which is arguably the soccer capital of the world, but it's having big problems with finishing all the stadiums on time and constant protests, some of them violent, as a backlash against overspending on sports facilities while so many Brazilians go hungry and many of the country's real infrastructure needs go unaddressed. So we'll talk about the controversial Brazil tournament now, the probably even more controversial 2022 games scheduled for Qatar, already drawing charges of slave labor at stadium construction sites. And maybe even we'll talk about the sport itself. Remember that part? With New York Times sports columnist George Vesey, a pioneer in writing about soccer for a U.S. audience. His new book is called Eight World Cups, My Journey Through the Beauty and Dark Side of Soccer. Hi, George. Welcome back to WNYC.
Always nice to be here.
At your first World Cup in Spain in 1982, you write that you had trouble following the ball because of the skill of the players and your untrained eye. So what can soccer players do with their bodies that you say was at first beyond your comprehension?
Well, they can move it so fast. I mean, at that level. And this, of course, we're talking about the first match I'm referring to is Brazil against Italy, Brazil against Argentina with the greatest players in the world. So players from Brazil could just flick the ball off the side of their foot. They could move it. And they knew where their teammates were. It was the way they played. It was an open style, too. So to watch the ball going in little triangles, I realized that, and not only couldn't I follow the ball, but I had trouble remembering who had touched it. Now, this is just a technical skill that a reporter had to pick up, but I learned to keep this endless loop in my mind of who had touched the ball in case something happened further down the field.
You're right. Who touched the ball and how and where it went for at least 60 seconds.
Right.
So can you give any tips to Americans who might watch this year for the first time and find it just a blur of people going up and down the field?
Well, I hope they won't. I mean, ESPN is going to be doing it, and they've been prepared. They're very good about giving you the overview of the field. Always watch what the possibilities are. And with almost any team there, there will be playmakers, and they should know. To me, having played the sport, and I was terrible at it. I mean, I knew nothing. I didn't have the technique. I didn't have the physical ability. But to watch a great World Cup player on one side of a field suddenly realize that there's too much defense on his side and to swing the ball over to the other side, you know, 30, 40 yards in the air, and it lands on the foot of a teammate who's moving at speed to take advantage of the opening on the other side of the field, or downfield the same way. These guys have eyes in 360 degrees and are able to spend, and sometimes you see a pass, Americans will see a pass go wrong or a shot go wrong, and they whine, but nothing happened. And you say, no. What you missed was that the guy put the ball there, and then the fella couldn't quite capitalize. But when somebody does it once a game or twice a game, it's beautiful. And that's what 80,000 people are waiting for. And if we Americans, or some of the Americans, still haven't learn to understand it. I don't want to be patronizing, but that's really their problem and not the problem of the sport.
And the subtitle of your book refers to the beauty of soccer. Soccer is so different from the other sport that you love the most, which is baseball. Baseball has discrete plays with a lot of stop time between plays, even more this year than in the past. Are baseball and soccer beautiful to you in different ways?
Very different. I mean, last night there was a play where the Mets botched a doubleheader.
A double play. At second base.
And people are talking about the pitcher throwing. But you can stop that play in time because it exists on a scorecard. You know that it should have been a 1-6-3 double play, but because, I think, because Murphy moved over, I can recreate it in my mind from where those guys had to have been, from what I saw, and then from endless replays as the inning developed. Soccer, you've got to remember it in your mind. And one little dirty secret of covering soccer is that reporters will huddle or will go back and forth right after a play, whether it fails or succeeds, and we'll say, who was that? That was so-and-so to so-and-so to so-and-so. We have to agree on it. And was it 10 yards? Was it 15 yards? And that's one way in which people who compete are collaborating.
George Vesey, my guest, his new book, Eight World Cups, My Journey Through the Beauty and Dark Side of Soccer. These issues in Brazil about overspending on stadiums for the world while hometown infrastructure and other needs of the people languish, are these new to you or do they come along with many World Cups?
Well, I want to say, and first of all, just to clarify, I am mostly retired at the Times. I'm not going to Brazil and, wasn't asked. And following only from great reporting in the Times and Jeremy Schapp and ESPN writing about slave labor in Qatar and following things that I pick up. So I have never seen the kind of protests that are going on in Brazil for the last year, when people in the street linked the rise of, whatever it was, 10 centavos for a bus ride to the World Cup, to the stadiums, and the fact that their favelas, their neighborhoods are being torn down to make room for the fat cats coming in, that it was the first time, and I covered 8 World Cups, and there was plenty of politics in every one, but I've never seen anything remotely like this of people in Brazil identifying futebol and FIFA, the world soccer body, as the problem, as the enemy. Who are they to come in and impose this event on us? We invented, we popularized the sport, we made it, but now we're paying for it for a party for them, for others, for multinationals, for gringos, for outsiders. And it's very political.
And I wonder if we can get some of our Brazilian listeners in on this. I know you're out there. Were you psyched when the World Cup was awarded to Brazil for this year, listeners? And how are you feeling about it now? 212-433-WNYC. Brazilians or people with ties to Brazil and Brazilian Americans, are you more excited by the prospect of the World Cup about to start there on June 12th or now more angry about either the spending or the protests? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And I saw where Pelé came out, the legendary Brazilian soccer player, as unhappy with both sides, the overspending on soccer when the people have so many needs, but also he denounced any violence in the protests.
Pelé is a brand now more than ever, and he has the need to be on both sides, not to get either side mad. He wound up having a lot of people who are, quote, protesting in Brazil. They were mad at him. In fact, Romário, one of the great players who has become highly political and critical of this World Cup effort, was quoted as saying, and I'm going to have to paraphrase, but something that he said was, Pelé is articulate when he is silent. Meaning with the ball on his foot, or just smiling and being Pelé. When he opens his mouth, what Romário was saying was, he's less articulate.
Mm. Well, he did it in few words this time in
right.
The clip that I saw.
Right.
On the Qatar games, we talked earlier in the show about the system where people from other countries, largely from Bangladesh and around there, are brought in, and they're practically indentured servants the way this is set up, where they have to pay to get the job, they get their passports taken away so they can't go home when they're not actually paid and their hours are regulated out of their control and they live in horrible conditions. But there's also this issue of why a summer tournament in Qatar where it'll be like 120 degrees. Do you think the movement to withdraw the games from Qatar might succeed or should succeed between these two issues?
I can say should. But should is a difficult thing to talk about FIFA, which is the most powerful and the most opaque, and I won't say most corrupt, but somebody could say that a sports organization in the world. I mean, the IOC are a bunch of Boy Scouts out to do good deeds as compared to FIFA. The IOC, the Olympic Committee, picks places on the basis of large books with standards. They send in professional evaluators. They look at things like heat and ecology and population density, what will happen to cities. The FIFA puts it out to their delegates who make deals. Most of the people or many of the delegates who voted for Qatar back 7 years or so ago have now been thrown out of FIFA for other reasons, for taking bribes, for either in that or in other cases. The former head, Sepp Blatter's predecessor, a guy named Avalanche, a Brazilian, he was booted out of that and the Olympic movement for criminality, and so is his son-in-law named Teixeira. So it's a corrupt milieu. Blatter has not been implicated per se in any of it, legally, but it's just, and so however Qatar happened to be chosen, it clearly was foolish in a lot of ways, And, you know, there's oil money. Qatar is very powerful. As soon as Qatar was chosen, Paris Saint-Germain got a good deal, new ownership. Things happened for countries like France that had shifted their votes. So it's all political.
Politics.
Should it be taken away? Well, I could say so, but it's difficult. For example, the United States, which is one of the few countries in the world that could host an Olympics or a World Cup on 6 months' notice. 6 months' notice, we've got the stadiums, we've got the hotels. It could be worked out. The United States should not want, and I don't believe does want, any part of a 2022 World Cup that was taken away from Qatar, for obvious geopolitical reasons. Just not a good idea. Wait till 2026, and I do have something at the end of the book where I suggest where that World Cup will be. I think it'll be stretching from Toronto down through the United States and into Mexico City. It'll be a North American World Cup, in my opinion. Now, I can't prove this, but I think the people who run football and soccer in the United States are just too wise to want to take anything away from, let's just put it at, from Qatar.
12 years to the NAFTA Cup,
well,
George Vassey's prediction.
Brian,
is right.
I hope you trademark that.
Levi in Essex County, you're on WNYC. Hello.
How are you?
Okay, thank you. You have a connection to Brazil?
Yes, I actually do. I have family members and friends who are from Brazil, although I am from Angola. Soccer is very common in our cultures, both cultures. And at this moment, it's a very critical time for the Brazilian people because here they are. These are people who have soccer in their blood, you can say that. And they also are fighting for their country. A lot of riots are breaking out due to the fact that although they love soccer, they still want justice, And earlier you guys were talking about that and how this is affecting the people. And I think it is a matter of just, FIFA understanding what is happening and, someone actually doing something about it because these are actual people suffering while other people are profiting from this.
Levi, thank you very much. And to Gabriella in Brooklyn. Gabriella, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hey, Brian. How's it going?
Good. Brazilian-American, right?
Yes, I am. My mom is actually from Brazil, and my boyfriend and I are going down to the World Cup in June, and we're actually doing a documentary film project and photo project along the way.
Around
we're
these traveling. Issues?
What's that?
Around these issues?
Yeah, so our idea is to kind of show life and culture beyond the World Cup because being Brazilian-American, I mean, I've been to Brazil almost every year. I'm 24, and I've been going down to Brazil my whole life. And I've seen that soccer is a huge part of the culture, but I also know that there is so much more to the culture beyond that. And so,
and you want to highlight those things. So in your opinion,
yeah.
Could it have been done in a way with all the construction that is necessary to make the people feel good about it? Because it is ironic to a lot of folks, and George was getting at this a couple of minutes ago, that Brazil is so associated with soccer, so loves its soccer,
sure.
And yet this is drawing protests. Could it have been done in a way where it didn't seem to be taking away from the people?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's kind of controversial. I mean, talking to my cousin that lives in Brasilia, she, in her opinion, I mean, there's a lot of things that people could have done when they announced it that as a host mm-hmm. country, instead of waiting for everything to be finalized and then sort of like jumping to the streets and saying they didn't right. want it before, almost like it was too late. But at the same time, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's tricky because everyone does love soccer, and you're not going to go down there and see no one celebrating. You
right.
know, everyone's still going to
yeah.
be participating.
Thank you. And George, you're nodding.
I am nodding because you can't hold Brazilians down. They will celebrate. One of my first impressions of World Cup soccer in 1982 was seeing the Torcida winding its way through Barcelona, people dancing in abbreviated costumes and just having a wonderful time. And I fell in love with Brazil right then and there, and nothing I've ever seen has the music, the football, the people has ever made me change my mind.
I heard that a crowd in Brazil killed a referee last summer, stoned him to death, and just this month, one soccer fan was killed when another threw a toilet bowl in what the Daily News called a soccer riot. Are these things Brazilian or kind of global soccer excess?
I don't like to blame, but since soccer is the world's most popular sport, there's bound to be excesses. I mean, there are ultras in Italy. There are madmen who, you know, can cut people up outside stadiums and all that. So in lots of – the United States hasn't developed that. I hope it never does. I've seen very sweet crowds in Seattle for a game, a U.S. game against Panama. I think we're doing it a little bit differently. But soccer can be pretty nasty, but it's not the fault of the sport. It's the fact that it's the world's – and crowds and individual lunatics will take advantage. Sociopaths in England will take advantage of it.
By the way, I see in the book that you played soccer on the Jamaica High School team in Queens in the 1950s. Nobody played soccer in the United States in 1950s.
Well,
How did you get into it?
I didn't actually play it.
Oh.
I was only out there on the field trying to run down a ball. But I was terrible. We had a United Nations team because we had Parkway Village nearby. And so we had, you know, all kinds. And our captain, a guy named Bob Seale, was actually a good player. His family was originally from Germany, and he grew up in Ridgewood, Queens, and all that. So there was good soccer around. I just didn't happen to commit any of it my 2 years on the team.
How's the U.S. looking for this World Cup?
You know, it's still a work in progress. The coach, Klinsmann, has not made his final cut. I think the most controversial cut, if I read Ridge Mahoney in the Soccer News, is talking about that Landon Donovan, the guy who scored the 91st-minute goal, is right on the cusp. He's getting older, and Klinsmann may not want to bring him along as a lucky charm, as a last 20-minute player. He and Donovan just don't get along, and to me, that would be a mistake because I think the United States still needs its wise old players. Other countries can cut their stars. I don't think the U.S. can.
George Vesey, mostly retired but still contributing, New York Times columnist, and now the author of 8 World Cups, My Journey Through the Beauty and Dark Side of Soccer. You called 96 your favorite World Cup. Is this shaping up to be a great one? We have 10 seconds.
I think 98. This one, from a distance, no, it can't be because I won't be there, but I'll be watching.
Thanks for coming.
Muito obrigado.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.